Hey, this is Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5 on this Monday. And with the polling places opening at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, we continue FM Talk 106.5's Get to Know the Candidates series. All candidates were afforded the opportunity for an on-air interview. Now sit back and learn more about the candidates who did come in to talk with Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile before you head out to vote.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5's continuing 2018 midterm coverage. We continue our series of interviews and your chance to get to know the candidates. More information and podcast available online at fmtalk1065.com. Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5, and we continue to get to know the candidates here on Midday Mobile. And in studio, David Sessions, of course, may know the name from his work in the House, running for Senate now. And thanks for being here.
Great to be here, Sean.
And let's talk about this as we are in the last days here of your run, Senate District 35. This is a question I ask most people come through here. If I watch y'all from a distance and I go, my gosh, the pace you're keeping, why do this? Why give your time?
Yeah, now more than ever, it looks like anybody that's with good sense would not want to get into politics.
Is that fair? From the outside, it looks like that.
That's fair. And I tell you, you know, Sean, it's we need good people in politics. We need people there for the right reasons. We don't need people going to Montgomery or Washington with agendas. We need people there that are working for the public that they represent. And that's why I got into politics. My children were grown. My wife and I have been fortunate. We've been blessed. Successful farming operation. And like I said, we'd been blessed. And I figured it was a good way to give back to the community.
Yeah.
And try and look out for our area.
Yeah, well, talk about our area too, because your day gig in farming here in Mobile County, and from the House District to now Senate District 35. Describe folks 35.
Yeah, District 35 is kind of the south third of the county, you would say, south and west. Of course, you got the north and west, and then you've got the city proper. Kind of the city is mainly in 33. Then you've got the northern portion that's 34, and then 35 is kind of the coastal area that goes all the way to 65, all the way to the state line, and probably up as far as around Cottage Hill area, Greelot area. Kind of most of it's rural, a little bit in the city,
right?
All the coast, actually Gulf Coast, part of the bay, so the Fowl River area and Hollinger's Island, Dauphin Island, all that area. So a wonderful district. A wonderful area, but a lot of challenges and opportunities.
Yeah, I want to talk about like those challenges and opportunities, because with 35, you talk about the rural nature, but even somebody who's in a rural nature, somebody who's farming in Mobile County, you also have urban issues or city issues as well. I mean, while you could be on your farm, but you're 10, 15 minutes away from stores and traffic and all those kind of things.
Exactly, yeah. We're that's what I told someone. We're 25 minutes from anywhere.
Right.
Out where we're at. But
it's not like completely. I mean, you're rural, yeah, when you're there on the farm and you're farming all that, but it's not like you're in the middle of the state of Alabama, somewhere way away from any metro area.
We have a lot of bedroom communities, I call it, out there in West Mobile that basically feed Ingalls Shipbuilding, Chevron refineries, and the shipyards in Bala Battery, and the shipyards in Mobile. So, great place to live. Not a lot of industry out there on the west area, but a lot of bedrooms.
That's
a lot
for
of people.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of people that go either east or west.
That's right.
Going to work. Let's talk about what's going to happen on Election Day. Voter enthusiasm. This is this big question, right? It's who's going to turn out, who's going to show up?
Yeah, I think everybody's a little bit fired up over the Kavanaugh issue. It's really sad that that took place like it did. You know, Sean, you can see the handwriting on the wall. Why in the world would someone hold something 80 days?
Right.
They hold it 80 days because there's nothing there. And then they throw it out like a bombshell and just make a zoo of the process. Now, the American public, we deserve better than that.
Right.
And I'm not going to disparage the Democrat Party. I guess, you know, they're really mad because Trump won. They're trying to do anything they can to stop his progress.
But do you think this Kavanaugh effect, do you think this is
a situation where what the Democrats were doing here is actually biting them in the tail somewhat, because it seems to me, I mean, I haven't run a real scientific survey, but it seems to me Republicans are engaged and ready to come out more than I thought they would have been if I'd have surveyed them back in August.
I believe it has. I really do. I think people realize what's at stake now. And you know, you go back to Kavanaugh, and I think that is one of the major reasons that Trump won the election, is the Supreme Court was in play, and I think that was one of the big driving factors that this country flipped to a Republican president. And it does. I think it does enthuse the perhaps both sides.
Yeah.
You know, it looks like maybe both sides are going to be more engaged, and in a way, that's a good thing. But you know, to try and destroy someone's character, you know, over something 35 years old, and just pulling desperation out of your hat. And of course, you see that every political campaign. You're going to see someone do something desperate, and especially if you're way behind. And I'm sure we'll see that coming up in our governor's race also.
But I think we've already seen.
I think we've seen a little bit of desperation already. So
that's an understatement. Yes. Yeah. Well, so voter turnout, I agree with you. I think it's going to be up. I think people are motivated to come out. But let's talk about also post-election day and looking at 2019, whether from a House perspective or a Senate perspective. A lot of things I felt were kicked down the road in 2018 that are all going to be lined up and waiting for y'all in 2019 in session.
Good perception there. I think you get to election year and the posture of the House and Senate is – re-elections coming up. So the tough decisions get put off a year to the first year of the quadrennium.
But they're still waiting for you.
All the time. And then a lot of times you can't solve those questions in that first year, even the second year. So then it gets kicked further down the road. And it's not a really good process. You know, I think we're going to see issues coming up on funding issues. Of course, you know, Sean, the budgets are in better shape than they've been in a long, long time. I think we're, you know, in 2018 or 2017, we actually had the same amount of revenue in the general fund that we had in 2008. So you go 9 years down the road and you had the same amount of money. And that kind of gets to the BP issue as to why so much of it was stolen from the coast. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to use the word stolen.
You can do that here. This is a show you can do that on.
Montgomery stole the money from the coast. Not that the state was not owed some revenue.
Right.
But they weren't owed
that revenue. And I don't want to go down a rabbit hole here on it. We can do it on another show. But just the mechanism of the state, if the state is going to argue – and the attorneys are going to argue to BP and say, we're due this money, then that is what the state lost out on, was their 6% of sales tax revenue, right? They wouldn't ever have – that revenue comes through Mobile and Baldwin counties. I mean, exactly. It seems like in them arguing – the case they argued to BP that they should get the money should be the same case that argues that a bigger percentage stays on the places where the money came from or didn't come from in the first place.
Right. And, I kind of – you not to point fingers, but I think all five governors and all five attorney generals across the Gulf Coast, they wanted to see that big pot of money come into the central government to where they would have some control over what it was used for.
But Mississippi did a heck of a better job.
They did a lot better job. You know, they really did. They really did a lot better job keeping most of their money on the coast. We did our best, I felt like. We fought hard.
And when you say we,
the entire Mobile and Baldwin delegation.
Okay, right. So
entire delegation, Democrats and Republicans both.
I watched y'all, but how do you make that case? Here's the problem. I watched that. Yeah. If they ganged up on you and you go back in 2019 session, whatever the new issue will be, I feel like the same kind of, even though I know there's 33% for sure of new people coming to session in Montgomery, at least 33% will be new. It seems like the same old gang up from Central Alabama, North Alabama against South Alabama happens.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it has to do with educating the members of the House and Senate. And I think we're trying to do that a little more now, trying to bring Central Northern people down here to the Gulf Coast. We use an opportunity occasionally on Dr. Shipp and Chris Blankenship with Conservation, and those guys, mm-hmm. they do a lot of research on the red snapper. Occasionally we'll get some legislators from North Alabama to come down. And when they go out there to do the research on the snapper, well, guess what they're going by? They're going right by all those oil wells, mm-hmm. gas wells. That's the reason we have a savings account in this state.
Right.
I mean, and I think they lose sight of the reason we have a savings account is because of the oil and gas trust fund.
And
really
it didn't come,
it is.
I hate to be mean, it isn't coming through Shelby County.
No, it's coming through Mobile County. The majority of it's coming right. through my district in Mobile
County.
It's
not coming through Etowah County.
And so I'm constantly working on building relationships with North Alabama senators and House members to educate them on, you know, the reason we are so passionate about the BP oil spill is because this is where the oil business, majority of it, takes place
right.
in the state. Not all of it, but the majority of it. And, of course, all of our savings account comes
through right here.
Comes right through here.
Now, we could even look at the federal side and talk about Go Mesa, yeah. but that's a whole, yeah. Whole other show. Just joining us, David Sessions, running four states in a District 35 in studio.
That's State Representative David Sessions, who's currently running for State Senate District 35. Coming up, the rest of Sean Sullivan's interview as we continue FM Talk 106.5's Get to Know the Candidate series. Thanks for listening to Midday Mobile as we continue to get to know the candidates before tomorrow's general election. Now the second part of Sean Sullivan's interview with David Sessions, State Senate candidate for District 35.
Let's talk about a couple of things here. Number one, speaking of 35, how about dredging of the ship channel?
Yeah, the dredging and widening of the ship channel is, you know, it's important to the port. It's important to the economy. But, Sean, we need to make sure that the material, the dredge materials are disposed of wisely and in the most beneficial use possible. You know, the sand material, the good beach quality sand material that's out in the mouth of the bay, you know, we need it placed further in toward the island to help feed Dolphin Island, feed our coastlines.
Instead of some kind of bank shot from, like, we're shooting pool, and some kind of bank shot from the beneficial use zone out there, seems like you have a higher percentage shot the closer you get that sand to the island.
Yeah, just like basketball, yeah. You want right? You want the ball up under the bucket.
Just give me the easy right. shot, right? Because right. that is going to be a higher percentage. And it's frustrating to watch this and say, gosh, number one, it just makes sense. Number two, fiscally it makes sense, even though the Corps says, well, this is the cheapest way to dispose it. But, my gosh, when FEMA has to come in after some horrible storm, God forbid.
Spend millions of dollars.
Well, we would have had the sand there in the first place.
We probably spent over $20 million on Dolphin Island over the years on environmental projects to help restore and you know, shore up the island.
Instead of
where
just letting
had they put the sand yes. where we needed it to begin with, we'd have been a money ahead. But unfortunately,
this is sand that naturally, if y'all haven't followed, would naturally would go to Dolphin Island if we weren't dredging the ship channel. And I'm with you. I want the ship channel widened, all that. But in a natural state, if we weren't here, the sand would be ended up on Dolphin Island. We're just short stopping it.
Yeah. Yeah. We're moving it too far out. And it's basically bypassing the island, depositing out in what they call Petty Boy Pass, a big deposit of sand out there that normally would not have been there had we put that sand where we needed it. So, but, you know, we want bigger ships and more economy and we want that, but we want to do it in a way that we don't destroy our bay right. and our island and our environment.
And I think we can have both.
I believe we can. I think it can be done.
All right.
And we're working toward that.
Good. Good. Because it's it leaves me sometimes just pulling my hair out going, why can't they see up there?
Why can't I short? Not as much to pull.
That's right. That's right. Let's talk about, you're talking about revenue for session. Gosh, from whether it be Speaker McCutcheon or, you know, Senate Pro Tem Del Marsh or Lotto. Lotto fever has gripped the pre-session discussion.
It sure has. I think this Mega Millions lottery has really got folks stirred up.
Right. Yeah, where's our cut of that? It's all in Florida or Louisiana or somewhere else.
Unfortunately, it is. You know, there are so many different ways of looking at a lottery. Personally, I'm against a lottery. But now I'm not against the people of the state making that decision.
Right. The right of referendum on this.
Sure. It would have to be a constitutional amendment because, you know, the 1901 Constitution prohibits games of chance.
Right.
And people ask, well, why do we have dog tracks or
electronic bingo?
The electronic bingo or the the poker rooms.
Right.
The definition in the 1901 Constitution was game of chance. And I think what little bit of skill comes into event, right. into the dog racing or paramutual.
I mean, we're right. We're paramutual, but
we're
just
splitting hairs there.
Right. I agree with you. I mean, either I don't like it when there's carve outs on nuance of language. Either you're going to do something. Sure. I'm like you. I'm agnostic. I'm not a gambler, but I believe in referendum, and I believe it's frustrating to watch one group be able to do something over here and the other group say, no, you can't do that.
Yeah, and it's difficult. Like I said, there's good arguments for and good arguments against. And, you know, my argument for it is probably one of the best arguments against it. It's a tax on the poor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a tax they choose to make.
Mm-hmm. Voluntary.
So it's kind of the argument can be used on either side.
Right. You're not forced. You're not compelled to play the lottery. You're not compelled to go gamble.
That's their, you know, chance of becoming rich. But, you know, you take those type of gambling things. And in my mind, and like I said, Sean, I'm a farmer, grew up on the farm, farmed all my life. In my mind, the roulette wheel to me at the casino is really no different than the Dow Jones Industrial yep. or, you know, that's my practical view of it
right.
is people are trying to
I thought you were going to say as a farmer, when you get rain,
right. Listen,
I'm the grandson of a farmer from way back. So
we're gamblers. Yeah.
Good to hear you say
gambler
that.
every day out there with the weather yeah. and the you know, it's just the insects and the
right. So y'all
the things that can go wrong. We're constantly at a gamble out there.
That is for sure. All right. Well, I want to do this before we wrap up here. People want more information about your run here, State Senate District 35. Where do they go? Online.
We do have a Facebook. Facebook and
so just look for David Sessions on Facebook.
Yeah, on Facebook. Look for us on Facebook. We do not have a website. Like I said, farmer. I'm not big on the computers. I will tell you one story about the farm before I let you cut me off. We have computers that steer our tractors.
Yeah,
now.
The GPS steering.
Yeah, the GPS steering. Well, I was on one of the tractors and it was kept messing up on me. So finally, my son fired me. He said, "Dad, you just can't work that computer. Get off that tractor."
Okay. So you got ejected from that tractor?
Yeah, I got fired off of that tractor. I couldn't run it anymore because I couldn't work the computer.
He didn't put you back on like a Ford 8N or something.
I had to get back on the old open tractors, you know, and eat the dust, all that stuff. But that's good too. Yeah. I enjoy it. But you can find me on my Facebook.
And, all right, very good.
And appreciate folks getting out November the 6th, and we'll see what happens.
All right, David Sessions, thank you for your time. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5's continuing 2018 midterm coverage. We continue our series of interviews and your chance to get to know the candidates. More information and podcast available online at fmtalk1065.com.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, and we continue to get to know the candidates. Joining me in studio, running for Alabama House District 96, Matt Shelby, running as a Libertarian. Matt, thanks for being in here.
I appreciate you having me. Thank
you. Yeah, and it was good to see you the other night. We were at Bayside for the meet and greet, and you were addressing, of course, all the voters, but also had the high schoolers there, some of them turning 18 by this coming month. And it was interesting to hear your take of why they should come out and vote. I mean, you're talking directly to the newest, freshest voters out there.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I was excited to see the young kids there. I think that we're at a point in American politics where we are tremendously divided. Yeah. We have a lot of partisanship, hyper-partisanship. We have a lot of tribalism. And we have both the Democratic and Republican parties are playing off that. You know, if you go to California or New York, you're going to see Democrats saying, just vote Democrat, you know, keep us in power. Here in Alabama, it's Republicans saying, just vote Republican, keep us in power.
Mm-hmm.
And the emphasis I have throughout my campaign and certainly to these young people at Bayside was that what we need to do is focus on the people. We need to focus on their ideas and not really look so much at party. I am a libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in the libertarian ideals. But ultimately, when I go to cast a vote, I'm going to do what I advise everybody else to do. And that's look at the people, do your research, get to know the candidates, get to know their ideas, and make your decisions based on that. And I hope that young people can start to do that better than I think some of us adults have done for a long time.
Well, hopefully it creates a donut hole, because I think in the past there was a lot more of that happened. I mean, past, we got to go back a few decades, where people would vote on name recognition, as always, but also, you know, oh, I know that person did this, or they were for this or that. They really didn't come in and say, hey, where's my straight ticket? That's been created over the last probably 30 years, this idea that to play with the team, you got to come in and just fill up and down the line. Everybody with an R and everybody with a D, depending on how you are, that's who you vote for.
That's right. That's right. And I don't think that's the right way to do it. You know, I'm not just running as a paper candidate. I'm not just running to send a message. I think that I'm a viable candidate, and I think I'm a candidate that's worth the people of House District 96's vote. I'm from Baldwin County. I grew up there. My family goes back, over 100 years on my mom's side. So I really know the area. I know the people. I've gone to school in state. I went to Auburn University undergrad, Alabama for law school. Moved back down here.
That's the smartest move ever for somebody who would be asking for votes. Yeah, that's good.
Well, don't ask me who I pull for, because I'm an Auburn guy. I'm an right. Auburn guy, but I appreciate Alabama. It's hard not to appreciate what Nick Saban's doing with their football team.
That's an efficient system, right? I mean, if we could have government maximize what it does at the level of Nick Saban, maybe it wouldn't have to be as big.
Well, you know, it's funny. I said this before. Nick Saban is one of those guys that no matter what he was in, he'd be good at it and he'd be successful at it. You put him in the business world, he would have succeeded. And goodness gracious, if he had decided to go into politics, he may be in the White House right now.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, okay, I want to talk about this because it's on your website and it's a subject, Lord knows, I get enough calls about this, term limits, right? This is your take on this.
Well, you know, and term limits is one of these things. It's not really a Democratic thing. It's not a Republican thing. It's not even a Libertarian thing. But it's something I believe in, you know, and I think that if you have term limits, you're going to get new blood into the state legislature. And, of course, I'm talking just about, at least in what I'm running for, the state House of Representatives and the state Senate. You're going to have new blood in there. You're going to have new ideas. You're not going to have people that are reelected time and time again just because they're already in there.
Right.
You know, you have so many races in Alabama and in other states where people are unopposed because you have incumbents who've run for years and years.
Now, the power of the incumbency, right?
Exactly. I mean, yeah. Exactly. And I think one of the other things that I've focused on in terms of term limits is corruption. You get in Montgomery, you get in Washington, D.C., you get really comfortable with all the people there. The lobbyists, the people taking you out to dinner, bending your ear. And I think we saw that in House District 96. You know, Randy Davis is under federal indictment right now. He's the outgoing representative for the seat I'm running for. Nobody I talked to said that Randy Davis was a bad person. I've heard nothing but good things about him. But if you've had the chance to read the 57-page federal indictment, it's quite damning. It's quite damning. There's always room. There's always room for interpretation. But my goodness, it doesn't look good. So you have good people that go to D.C., or in this case, Montgomery, and they get tied into special interests, to lobbyists, and things like this happen. And I think if you make sure that there's a limited amount of time they have in there, maybe two terms, maybe three terms, and then they're out, maybe you don't see that as much. Now, I can't prove that,
right.
But it's
no,
one of the
I, no, I like the theory, and I think it's valid. I don't think people go – maybe there's someone – you know, the exception to the rule. But people don't go like, I'm going to go to Montgomery and be as corrupt as I can be. I don't think that happens very often. I think it's exactly the more logical thing is people just get used to a status quo.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, most people, and this is in politics and everywhere else, most people think they're doing the right thing. They think that what they're doing is okay. But in politics especially, you end up at a point where you can't see the forest for the trees. You can't see what's going on outside of your little sphere.
Right. Just joining us, talking with Matt Shelby, running for Alabama House District 96. Let's talk about something that if you're elected, you'll be dealing with in session in 2019 in no uncertain terms. Matt McCutcheon said it's lotto. We're talking lotto. So what is your take on Alabama State Lottery?
And here's another issue that I've had, even among other libertarians like myself, there's debate on it. Should the state be running gambling?
Oh, man. We could talk for a long time. Yeah.
Oh, we could. And if it was just a matter of Alabama looking at the lottery, That'd be one thing. But here's the issue. We're surrounded by states with a lottery. We just saw this with the $1.6 billion Mega Millions.
Mm-hmm.
We have our people going across the border and giving, essentially donating money to other states.
In mass, yeah.
In mass. And we can't do that. We need to keep that money in state. Now, and I talk about the lottery in conjunction with the grocery tax. The mm-hmm. grocery tax is something I'd like to see gone.
Right.
The fact is, the grocery tax, a lot of that money goes to fund schools. So you take away that funding, where does it come from? Well, I'd much rather see and let's be realistic, the lottery is a voluntary tax.
Yes.
If you're playing the lottery, guess what? You're not going to win.
That's right. That's right. You're choosing to give away the money for some period of time for a mental vacation, daydream about winning the money.
Exactly. But it is voluntary. And
yes.
As a libertarian, I think that giving voluntarily is a whole lot better than having money taken from you. And we're looking at the grocery tax especially. We're one of very few states that actually has a grocery tax.
Yeah.
And again, we're bordered with one state.
A full freight grocery tax.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So if you look at this, and yeah, we'll have to talk again about the state lottery, but you also mentioned fantasy sports. Because let's look at – there's fantasy sports, and then there's – I mean, you look just at sports gaming right across the line in Mississippi mm-hmm. as well. I mean, eventually – If people want to go gamble, they're going to go gamble, right? I mean, they're going to leave our state and go gamble.
Yeah, they're going to. I mean, we see, you know, buses going from retirement yes. homes to Biloxi every day. You
right.
know, it's going to happen. And it's not really the government's job to determine what's good for you, what you should do with your money and what you shouldn't. I can blow my money in anything I want.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I try to be responsible. I'm not a gambler myself, but
right.
if I wanted to wager a few dollars, I should be allowed. If I want to play fantasy sports
yeah.
with the potential to win some money, I should be allowed to.
And let's talk about it. And yeah, because there's two ways, and I like it. I mean, this is the discussion we had a lot, that there's a part of just saying you have the liberty to do something versus so many times that these ideas, whatever they are backed up because the state needs revenue. Right. I mean, there's a two part. If the state needs revenue, so now this thing is okay, when actually the core discussion is whether you should have the liberty to do these things or not.
And that's where I come at it from. You know, there's things you ought to do and things you ought to be permitted to do by the government.
But it doesn't mean it's a great choice.
There's
right.
lots of really awful things
right.
that I'll probably go have fast food later.
Yeah.
Should I do that?
Yeah.
That's a really bad choice.
Right.
But
you
it's
have
not
the,
right to do it.
That's right. You have the freedom to do that.
That's the first half of Sean Sullivan's interview with Matt Shelby, candidate for state representative in District 96. Part 2 coming up next as we continue to get to know the candidates, and then the Paul Feinbaum Show at 2 o'clock. Here's the rest of Sean Sullivan's conversation with Matt Shelby, candidate for state representative in District 96. After that, it's the Paul Feinbaum Show at 2 o'clock on FM Talk 106.5.
Let's talk about this, and from the legal perspective, interesting. Civil forfeiture and property seizure reform. That drives a lot of phones here when we talk about it. What's your take on this?
Well, I am a former prosecutor, actually a former drug prosecutor in Baldwin County, and I dealt with civil forfeitures. And I saw most that came across my desk were legitimate,
mm-hmm.
and we've got good police officers and law enforcement in Baldwin County, and they did a good job. Some were not. The problem is here in Alabama, you don't even have to be accused of a crime, let alone convicted.
Your stuff is accused of a crime, right? Your
exactly.
stuff, not you.
Yes. Your stuff is actually, if I pursue a civil forfeiture case as a prosecutor, I'm filing a civil lawsuit against objects, against a car, against money. And it may be money that belongs to someone who has never been charged with a crime, ever, and certainly not with a crime involving that money. The simple reform is to require that someone is convicted of a crime before having their stuff taken away. And I think it's a pretty common sense reform that if most people understood what was going on, they'd be in favor of.
But there is a motivation, a financial reward there for the civil asset forfeiture. I mean, they fund a lot of stuff. They'll say, listen, it's funding good work.
It is. And, well, a lot of what it funds is the war on drugs.
Right.
A lot of what it funds is finding more people that you're taking money from. And again, I'm not trying to imply that our law enforcement does this intentionally, but it's just the natural—
But by design,
by
right?
By design,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you can't help— Yeah, I don't know that, once again, just like we talked about Montgomery, I don't think folks in law enforcement are saying, hey, I need to go seize this thing so I can get some stuff. They're going after drug crimes, but hey, while we're at it, look here, and this stuff and this person, pretty sure they got it from the ill-gotten gain, and look, it helps us continue this mission.
and it's kind of a cycle there. Uh-huh. It's kind of a cycle. You find stuff, you have more money for nice cars, nice equipment, more officers, good people that are doing, they're executing the law as they're hired to do.
Right. Let's talk about that. That's the part, like, when people get mad at law enforcement, I say, yeah, you know, y'all are missing things. We've gotten a very corrupted view of how things work. It's called law enforcement because the laws are on the books and they enforce them. The legislature is where the laws, that's where you should take your beef. So let's talk about that. Marijuana laws, drug reform, what's your take on this?
I mean,
you were specifically a prosecutor, a drug prosecutor.
I was. I believe that the war on drugs is a failure. And that's not to say, and I've had discussion with my children too, drugs are bad.
Right.
Don't do drugs.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that the war on drugs, prosecuting people for what I believe amounts to an illness, is not working to decrease drug use.
Right.
So specifically what I'd be looking at initially in the legislature is medical marijuana. I realize we're in Alabama. It's going to take steps. We're going to have to show people that this is not that scary,
right,
that letting sick people use this plant, this substance, is not that scary. But I think moving towards legalization of marijuana after that down the line, once people are more comfortable with it, would be the way to go.
And you know, there's two ways. It's all in semantics. Some people will say legalizing marijuana, recreational marijuana. Some people will say decriminalizing it. What is the difference? Because you have the savvy for being a prosecutor. What is that?
Decriminalizing doesn't address one of the big issues with the drug war. If drugs are illegal, they go on the black market. People are going to get drugs. And who profits from the black market? Drug cartels and criminals. If you decriminalize, it doesn't mean it's legal to buy anywhere. It doesn't mean that it goes from the black market to the white market. It's still on the black market. So you're still funding drug cartels. You're still funding criminals instead of legitimate business owners. And that's why I think it would be a decent step.
Right. But it's not the same because often they get lumped in, right? People say, well, yeah, it's legalization, decriminalization, but they aren't the same.
No, they're very different things. They're very different things. And I think that one of the big benefits of rolling back the war on drugs and looking at legalization of marijuana is that you start to defund these criminal enterprises. You take money, you literally take money out of the pockets of criminals and you ensure the legitimate business owners are the beneficiary of that, and they're paying taxes on it.
All right. One last one here. If you're elected and you go to Montgomery, how do you get them to pay attention to Southwest Alabama, let alone District 96? But I mean, how do you get the cabal up there from Central and North Alabama to pay attention to us?
Let me answer this in two ways.
Okay.
First of all, there's a whole lot of tax money that comes from District 96.
Yep.
There's a whole lot of tax money. We should have more sway than we do.
Now, yes, good to hear that because, we should.
We sent a lot of money up there, and we need to make sure – and I think a lot of the Republican candidates have made good points here. You know,
mm-hmm.
Again, I'm not a partisan guy. I'm a libertarian,
right,
but I'm not
right.
a partisan guy. Some of the Republican candidates have made a good point. We aren't getting our fair share in regard to what we're getting back compared to what we're sending there. That being said, I've been asked by a few people, what are you going to do for District 96? And that's a tough question because what I want to do most of all is keep Montgomery – out of District 96.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want our tax money going up there. I don't want this gas tax we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want this gas tax passed if it indeed comes up in the legislature. I want people to
You're
leave.
You're a no on a gas tax increase?
I'm no on a gas tax. No on essentially any tax increase. If there's a net of less government, I may consider something.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, if there's going to be more government, and guess what? A gas tax is more government and more money going to the government. I oppose that. But generally for Baldwin County and Mobile County, the areas in District 96, what I can offer is that I will keep Montgomery out of your hair and allow you to prosper on your own merits. And that's what libertarianism is a lot about,
sure,
is prospering on your own merits. The government staying out of the way so that the people who work hard can win and make their own way.
There it is. More information online. Where do they go?
You can go to electmattshelby.com or my Facebook page is also Elect Matt Shelby.
All right. Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.